What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The following presentation is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, home to a vast array of sports and entertainment podcasts, including Two and a Half Wrestlers, Neckbreaker, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Inconclusive Breakdown, Midnight Jury, After Midnight, Apex Radio, and The Shining Wizards. Plus exclusive shows Thursday Night Destruction and Kevin Gill's King of Indies podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boom, and at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Player, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Myself, we're gonna whip you like you've never been whipped before. And all I can say is, Jimmy Cornette, you better get ready, you better be prepared, and you better wear a lot of clothing, because this is gonna hurt going across your butt. And you know, Cornette, this is the only strap. You're not gonna get the United States Tag Team belts. We're gonna be looking at you right in the squared circle.
Hi guys, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us out here, Mr. Crockett. And I'd like to say one more thing. Jimmy Cornette,
all right, ladies and gentlemen,
coming up.
Listen, we gotta go. Ladies and gentlemen, Rock and Roll Express is back with us there. Great work.
Every girl crazy about a sharp-dressed man.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everyone in between, your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, from the current to the way back, this is the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, and I am joined by
Mega Powers.
What's up, brother?
I'm doing good, man. Feeling a bit exhausted, burning the midnight oil. But I'm in good spirits. I'm ready to go.
Good. I'm glad you are. So, as am I, because we're live, David.
We're live.
That's right. Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, as always. Welcome to Wednesday night. A crowded Wednesday night now, apparently, if you're watching the wrestling on television.
Yeah, well, you got ROH, you got TNA. What else is on?
Lucha Underground, NXT. Yeah, it's a plethora of programming tonight.
So Saturday morning has now changed to Wednesday night.
Yeah, pretty much. We're always competing with somebody.
Hey, man, you know, when you're number one, you're going to have all kinds of people gunning for you.
It's true. It's true. Hello to everybody in the chat room. I see Sugar Shane in there. Who else is in there? Kid Human, Tank, Heyman, and everybody else is anonymous. So welcome to the show tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We are your Wednesday night delight. Kicking ass, taking names. Yeah, it's been a long week professionally, I should say. It's been just ridiculous at work. So, and plus we have a new member of the family, so we have a kitten, so it's like taking care of a kid. So
yeah, I saw the photo.
Yeah, good stuff. He's a good boy, but he's a baby, you know, so you have to watch him and make sure he doesn't kill himself, do anything retarded. So, oh, look at that. Let's see. Who else is in there? Mr. Matt E. Legend is in the room.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, Matt's in there. I got to get my list back up because I fucking...
We're graced by his legendary presence.
Dead or alive, you're right. Coming with me.
Yeah, man. I see Scott in there.
Scott!
That's right. All right. All right, so we got a good show for you lined up tonight. I just before we get into anything, a couple of programming notes. Speaking of Scott, our boy Kid Human, he won the Royal Rumble contest back in January. He picked the number of the winner, so he gets 24 hours of programming here on the Rant, and that begins this Friday at midnight. And of course, he picked multiple episodes of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Because he's a smart individual.
He's arguably one of the smartest people we know in this room, on this planet. So he picked some fine programming. He got one wrestling call-in show with the birth of the IWO. Speaking of the IWO, if you guys have the TV One channel, they're doing a documentary on Ike Turner tonight. So get your DVRs and record that shit, as am I. Let's see. We got a message from our boy Stu in the UK, Dave, who runs the Indie Corner.
He wants what do you have to say?
He just said hello, and can we please plug his website? So go to indiecorner.com. They got a podcast there. Stu does his thing. He recently interviewed Jim Molyneux, former ECW referee. So shout out to Stu. Stu's always plugging us and giving us some love. So shout out to Stewie. He messaged me a little while ago. Of course, I'll plug the show for you, of course. Interviewed Anthony Bowens.
We haven't mentioned him in a while. Thumbstick Ninjas, too.
Yeah, Thumbstick Ninjas. Our boy Rob spoke. Yeah, so thumbstickninjas.com, indiecorner.com. He just interviewed yesterday, it got posted yesterday, speaking of Anthony Bowens from PWS.
Yeah.
So, Stu does a lot of good stuff for the indies, man. US and UK. So go check those guys out. Go check Thumbstick Ninjas out. They got new stuff, too. New Wizards coming out tomorrow on the Shining Wizards Network. Actually, be out later on tonight. They're interviewing Bubba Ray Dudley tonight. New Midnight Jury this week. Mike just put out his synopsis for the next couple of shows. And a new and conclusive breakdown. Blind Tag with our pals over at the Gideon Clan. The Fallen Angels, shout out to them. Just a lot of good stuff, man. The Rant did some great programming last night. They had a triple header. Surfer had a special with Are You Reading Comic Book Show. I joined in on that with Mr. Will Morgan and a bunch of people. Tank was on there. And then The Rant. And then they had a nice Freaks and Effing Geeks with Rage and Lee. So, guys, there's nothing short of brilliant shit going on with these two networks. Go check them out. And I think that's it. Everything else I will
plug later on, the website and all the tweets and everything, all the other nonsense. So, all right, pleasantries are out of the way. Let's get into some news. Where is my and we actually got questions this week, Dave. Can you believe that shit?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. If you listened the couple of minutes prior to 9 o'clock, I posted a nice little clip of the legendary tag team, the Fantastics, Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton from the City of Angels. Remember them? I love their intro. Tommy Rogers tragically passed away the other day in his home in Hawaii. He's 54 years old. Tommy Rogers was well-traveled, Mid-South, NWA, the world class, as well as All Japan and New Japan. He was a mainstay in Japan for a while until he retired a couple of years ago. They don't know what's going on. Dave Meltzer reported that he killed himself, but that's false, as Bobby Fulton has been all over Facebook and social media.
I'm sure he has.
Going off on that. So our condolences to the Fantastics camp. Our condolences go to the family of Bobby Rogers. We just talked about the Fantastics recently.
You just call him Bobby Rogers?
Tommy Rogers, a Tamikaze. I'm sorry, guys. I am fucking exhausted. It's been a long couple of days. We were just talking about the Fantastics recently. And
yeah, I think more so about Bobby Fulton being a wacko jacko as a...
Yes.
Late.
Yeah, yeah. So he, you know, again, took to social media. He's upset, and rightfully so. They were a good tag team. Legendary feuds with the Sheep Herders. Legendary feuds with the Midnight Express. Yeah, they were in Mid-South for a while, too. Good shit, man. Really good shit.
Yeah, you know, what was it? I recently saw a clip of them in Mid-South, and, like, I think it's funny. Like, you always hear, like, guys talking about how over that they are, you know, people were like tearing off their clothes and stuff like that. And actually did see a clip of them down in Mid-South, and Jesus Christ, like they had the ZZ Top song playing.
Yeah, cool.
And, you know, it's a small, like, you know, little place that they're doing these studio tapings, and the fucking fans were going nuts. Like they were literally like ripping these dudes' clothes off. Like it wasn't, you know, you might watch like an old episode of TNT or something like that with, what was it? They had the U.S. Express, and they're, you know, they obviously have like these like fans that are paid off to, you know, rip off their clothes and stuff like that. But,
no, but the girls went crazy. Legit,
they were like rabid fans, like the true definition of rabid.
Yeah, the girls went crazy for the Fantastics.
Like, so those dudes were getting laid down in Mid-South.
The ZZ Top thing was used obviously by Jimmy Jam Garvin. We all know that, but I guess around that time, even prior to that, the Fantastics used it, and. There was apparently the story goes that they were approached and told that ZZ Top bass player Dusty Hill was inviting them to meet them in a local bar in Texas when they were in World Class, which Rogers and Fulton obviously thought it was a rib. And when actually Hill showed up and they were expected to be served with some kind of like, hey, cease and desist, don't use my song anymore. But he's actually a big fan, and that was cool. So it was nice.
You know, who else met a member of ZZ Top?
Who did? Who did you?
Me, the Mega Powers.
You met, who'd you meet?
I met Billy Gibbons one day.
Billy fucking Gibbons, one of my favorite guitar players of all time.
Yeah, I just saw him on the street. He was hanging out by, there's these like dudes that sell like African art, like not too far away from MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art. So I was like, oh shit, that's Billy Gibbons, because you can't like mistake a dude with like a giant beard wearing all black, and especially like that beanie that he wears over his head. He was wearing that. It's like this guy's like uniform. Like he only has like millions of that outfit in his closet. I was like, oh shit, that's Billy Gibbons. So I went over to him and I'm like, hey, you're Billy Gibbons. And he's like, yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
And it was funny. He was like a super like cool guy. Very, fun to chat with. He was trying to get me to buy some African art, and I'm like, listen, dude, I have like no fucking money. I can't buy this African art. So he's like, all right, I'll let you take a picture. So
you took a picture of Billy Gibbons.
Yeah, he was really cool.
So you need to post that on social media so we can all gloat.
I think I already posted it, but I'll pull it back up.
Yeah, please and thank you. Billy Gibbons is guitar royalty. He also was, it's been quoted as Jimi Hendrix being his favorite guitarist.
Really?
Yeah, he's guitar royalty. So shout out to Billy Gibbons. And
yeah, was it? I know he did some shows with Social Distortion last year. Jumped on stage with them a few times. So ZZ Top.
Yeah, when Billy Gibbons comes to your town and you have a show, you might want to put him on stage.
Yeah.
Just bump up.
Planet of Women is my favorite song.
I like Tush. I'm not going to lie, but there's a, there's a whole bunch. LaGrange, which Barry Windham used for a while.
Really?
Yeah. So I like LaGrange and Tush. It's like my favorite songs.
Yeah.
And they do a cover of Viva Las Vegas, too, if any Elvis fans are in the chat room or listening when on download. So it's
I may have heard their version of it. I can't recall.
And their older stuff is real bluesy, so.
Yeah, really bluesy. It doesn't sound like.
Doesn't sound like Chuck Dress
Man. It's from the 80s.
Yeah, but it's good stuff nonetheless, though.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's get into some other news. Where's my fucking list here? I just scrolled down. I have my list on. Just trying to put it on the computer instead of right typing it. So, here we go. All right. Did you see Elimination Chamber?
Yes, I did. And I was thoroughly impressed, with the exception of the Intercontinental title Elimination Chamber. The
Elimination title match was a bit bunched. I guess it was kind of, not rushed, but it was like, didn't have a good flow to it, right?
I thought the flow wasn't too bad. But I do feel like some matches seem kind of thrown together, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, there were some injuries, you know, what was it? Rusev got injured, so he couldn't participate in the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah,
threw his it was an interesting choice that they had.
Mark Henry.
Not just Mark Henry, but Ryback winning the Intercontinental title.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I really thought Barrett was going to get it because he's been jobbing to everybody since he won the crown, you know?
I thought it was going to be Sheamus because I remember there were all these big rumors that they were going to do something with Sheamus. And so far, he's kissed somebody's arse and has a stupid haircut, and that's it.
Yeah, that monster push wasn't as monstrous as it was supposed to be, huh?
Yeah, I guess not.
But
just another tall tale from the rumor mill.
Yeah, dirt sheep bastards.
Can't trust everything you read.
I enjoyed the pay-per-view, and I hate the Elimination Chamber, but like I was talking to the guys on the rant when I was doing the pre and the post show, I was hopefully I was going to have a nice side of crow with my yard bird, and I did, man. It was really, really good. I enjoyed it. The tag team title match I thought was pretty cool with all the spots.
Yeah, that was really good. I was very surprised because, granted, they're all great teams, but I don't know, just not all of them get to gel very, you know, well at all.
Yeah.
They did well at WrestleMania. Didn't they have like a rematch like the night after or like at the next pay-per-view or something like that with all those teams?
Yeah, I didn't watch Raw, so I don't know.
Either way. No. They had the Raw after Mania. Had the four team.
Oh, the four teams at the Mania. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was like another like elimination match or something like that.
Yeah.
No. Either that or it was like a 8-man tag. Either way, that match was really good.
Right.
Elimination Chamber. They've been on a pretty decent roll with the tag team division lately. And I think it's been a great idea that they have New Day
as the heels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I was
too.
Lining you up to say it. Come on.
Yeah, and the Freebird rule thing.
No, to say New Day.
New Day! I picked Mikey up from school today. And he didn't expect me to pick him up because I normally don't pick him up. I get him after school as somebody brings him to me at the bus or whatever. So now
you scream New Day at him?
He comes off the bus. He sees me in it. I have my father-in-law's car. He's like, New Day! And like the entire crowd of kids turned around and looked at him. He just put his hands up like, what? Shout out to our boy Ray, by the way, Ray Mayhem. He sent us, he sent Mikey and myself a junkyard dog figure with the metal chain and everything. So it was pretty cool.
Nice.
So shout out, got that today in the mail. Shout out to Ray. Yeah. So what happened to New Day? We like the New Day. I even enjoyed the Divas match. Divas match is pretty good.
That one I wasn't paying too much attention to. That's when
yeah,
I stopped.
I normally don't, but what'd you think of the Kevin Owens Cena thing without beating a dead horse. I mean, I haven't spoken to you, so I want to get your take on it.
Match of the night, of course. And I know that there's like some people that were kind of ragging on other internet wrestling fans, saying like, oh, Roman Reigns was in a similar position. Everybody shat on him. Well, Reigns doesn't, have that kind of charisma that Kevin Owens has. He doesn't have that kind of confidence that Kevin Owens has. And, it's plain as day, plain as new day.
New day!
That, Kevin Owens hasn't just been around for 14, 15 years, but he's been doing a lot of stuff in that time. And, just going back to... when he really got over in ROH, when he was starting shit with Jim Cornette, and they were kicking him out of ROH shows and stuff like that. The guy's developed quite a personality, and I remember seeing him in Jersey All Pro when he was calling himself Mr. Wrestling Kevin Steen. So to throw it back even further, and I wasn't a fan of his then, I think for a lot of people, he grew on everybody, as time passed. He was the master of the backbreaker, along with Roderick Strong. They were a team together. And, the guy's got it.
I just got
it. Not a lot of guys have it.
No.
He has it. And it doesn't matter what he looks like. He's really transcending, stereotypes, especially look-wise for a WWE wrestler. Like, this guy, I showed a picture to you and you'd never seen a match by this guy. You'd be like, this guy looks like a schmuck who's, pumping gas.
Well, that's what Mike from the Midnight Jury was saying. He doesn't like Kevin Steen, but he said he just reminds me of the everyday guy that I'm going to see at the Memorial Day barbecue this weekend, a couple weeks ago. So, and that's a valid point.
Yeah.
I didn't like him when I first saw him at Chikara. I was like, he was in that Cibernetico thing, and he was like placating to the crowd. He was shit talking. I'm like, come on, man, just get in the fucking ring and do it. And of course, thank God Eddie Kingston and Grand Akuma. He was the champion at the time. Him and Eddie Kingston tore up, but. He didn't grow on me till like a year or two later when he started that feud back up with Generico, and then forget about it. Like, his whole persona changed. He played up to the fact that Cornette did him dirty, and part of that was not part of the gimmick. Part of that was a shoot. They really did not get along, and he had to step away and stuff like that. But... I was talking about this with Lee too. He's the complete package, man. Like, he can do it all right now, and there's nobody that has gotten the push that he's gotten since he's made his debut. Nobody. Nobody has been. The guy went on NXT his first night, won the belt. Within 5 months, he's NXT champion, and he punked out the face of the company.
Yeah.
So I mean, again. Will he get buried like Cena does everybody else? Possibly. Who cares? But right now I'm enjoying it. So, and we'll cover that base when we get there. But I, speaking of, I just got a text from Tony C. New day. So, but yeah, man, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Rollins, Ambrose match.
Yeah, that match surprised me as well. I was really
kind of predictable. I knew that was going to be some kind of...
You saw the dusty finish coming?
Oh, by a mile. We all called it. There was no way he was dropping a belt. I honestly thought he was going to win the belt and then take it back from the next night, but they did it that night. Mm. I actually thought that they were going to put the belt on Ambrose for 24 hours, but that's where I was wrong. But I knew the dusty finish was coming. Speaking of dusty finish, did you see Paul Heyman on Austin's podcast?
No, I didn't get to see it, but I heard some of the feedback, and it was just kind of like, well, they already talked a lot about the stuff that they talked about on the network on Austin's previous interviews with them.
He did.
So, yeah. I haven't been rushing to go listen to it. Plus, you know, they had the ECW Exposed interviews, which were really good. I really enjoyed those because they had a lot of new information. But, you know, part of me wasn't willing to rush back to a Heyman podcast interview with Austin, even if it was on the network, mainly because of I think he's been a bit overexposed just with like a lot of the Monday Night Wars shows that are on the network and stuff like that. So just wasn't a priority for me. But I heard the tease of Austin versus Lesnar, which for one, I don't think it's going to happen. And two, if it were to happen, can't really say it would, you know, I'm going to play typical fan and say, I don't think it would actually be that great of a match.
I was disappointed in the interview. I was, although Heyman had a good Dusty impersonation, and apparently
really?
Once he did it, I was getting text messages and Facebook messages saying, Phil, Paulie's giving you a run for your money for Dusty. I'm like, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. What bothers me about this whole thing of them having the interviews on the network now, I feel like the hosts can't get the quote unquote hard questions off as often as they can on their shows normally.
Well, I think in general, a lot of them kind of don't want to ask the hard questions, or they'll, you know, they'll try to get them across, but at the same, it's kind of like they, how can I word it properly? Like, they don't want to stir shit, and two, I don't know. Sometimes these tough questions aren't things that really, you know, desperately need an answer. You know, I remember I was really looking forward to Jim Ross's interview with Sting. And I badly, Sting. Just so badly wanted Sting to say that he's going to the WWE. And, you know, I knew going into the interview, he, like, whether he is or he isn't, he's not going to answer that question.
Yeah,
and true to form, that was exactly the case.
Sugar Shane in the chat room, people are paying for it, so why should they lay back? It's true.
Yeah, it's I agree, true. But I think just due to the nature of the product and the people that are involved, I don't think that they are going to dig deep. You're not going to hear some, you know, R-rated, you know, kind of program that you would normally hear if you just download these people's podcasts. So I don't think they're going to really dig, you know, deep enough, you know?
Yeah, again, I was disappointed.
You know, first, and plus, you know, second of all, these guys are wrestlers. They're not Barbara Walters. We're not going to be seeing people crying or anything like that.
No, maybe, I don't. Maybe I don't,
they do need a wrestling Barbara Walters to
no,
get that.
No, because you know what? There's some, I don't want to say there's some level of kayfabe, but there's some level of
protecting their character.
Protecting the business. Not even the character, the business. I mean, everything's out in the open. People don't want to be fucking surprised anymore. Everything has to be like, oh my God, you know, people have to read who's coming in, and there's no, you know, there has to be some kind of protection there. So I get that. Although I thought, because Austin has been doing a really good job of asking people the hard questions. Unlike Jericho, who just placates to the machine because he wants to whore his name out there. And you know what? I have no issue with that.
Yeah. You know, as much as I enjoy Jericho, I do get a bad taste in my mouth when I download his stuff, because it's like, oh man, I really want to hear his interview with some people, because he does get some good information out, but it's very obvious that, you know, when you know, whoever the hell he's interviewing with, he's gonna play it safe. So
I'm a big hardcore fan, and I listen to Jamie Joss's from Hatebreed's podcast, and Jamie has actors and musicians and wrestlers on. He recently had Mick Foley on. And this was when Mick Foley put out the when he was putting out the Santa Claus documentary last year. I guess him and Jamie were in the same spot, because Jamie, well, Hatebreed's from Connecticut, so Mick Foley passed through there, and it's a good listen. But Jamie, who is a fan, Jamie Joss is a wrestling fan. He's not an insider. He's not a fucking wrestling podcaster like us. He's not. He's like a regular fan who, you know, and he asked a bunch of questions. And I thought Mick, not that, you really have to come correct to throw Mick Foley off of his game. Because yeah. now the guy's pretty polished. He does spoken word. He does stand up. He does, you know, a lot of interviews now. And he's in and out of spotlight. He comes back once in a while, makes his appearances. And he's still hot on the indies in terms of appearances, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, he put Foley on the spot a few times. Not on the spot, but like asking the hard questions. And, you know, Mick was, I think, as honest as he can be without compromising anything. And I think that's where you as the fan, you as the listener have to draw the line. Like, you know, what do you expect them to say? It's like, do you want, it's like fucking David Copperfield coming to my house for Christmas and going, all right, guys, listen, I'm going to show you how I made that building disappear in 1989. All right. So, all right, Mega Powers, you go stand outside, go pull your carpet in front of Phil's lawn. I'm going to get the lawn mower. I'm going to, and then you have your wife get a sheet. And I'm going to show you how to, but you don't want David Copperfield to show you all the tricks. You want to be fucking, you want to be shocked. You want to be in awe. You want to be like, oh, wow.
What kind
you
know? Of questions was he asking Foley?
Like, you know, like in certain aspects of his career, like what was said to him, what was done to him, like in terms of like backstage politics and, mm-hmm. you know, like just not like hard questions, but questions that a smarter wrestling fan Like some of our fans would say to Mick Foley, like, hey, man, what happened the night that you were so-and-so, and he said so-and-so, and apparently that's supposed to be happening, and, you know, that. And then it turned into Mick Foley telling him, it turned into Jamie telling Foley that because of the way Mick wrestled and put his body out there every fucking night that he gave him props, and I think that's why the fans respect him more, and it turned into a whole big-ass kissing thing, but nonetheless, yeah. It was cool that Jamie was like, when Jamie interviews people, he's like in awe. Like, he recently interviewed Mike Muir from Suicidal Tendencies, and you could tell that he was like in awe. You know,
he was a big fan, yeah.
Yeah, of course. A big fan of Vinny Stigma and, you know, and Roger from Agnostic Front. Like, these are guys that he worshipped and played with and stuff like that, you know. But it's, you know, it's cool. So I was, again, getting back to Austin real quick, I was disappointed. I was hoping, and you know, Heyman is a very integral part of the whole Brock Lesnar thing. So, you know, Austin was like, yeah, so what's the deal? Are you coming back? Will Brock be back? And of course, Heyman said, yeah, he'll be back pretty soon, actually. And Tony C and I predicted probably Battleground, whatever the fuck it's called, the one before SummerSlam. But so then Austin said to him, why don't you advocate for anybody else? I mean, you hear all the time. Why don't you bring out other clients? And then Paulie said, well, it's not special. So Austin's like, what do you mean? So Paulie made the Christmas comparison. He's like, you like Christmas, right? He goes, yeah. He's like, well, how would you feel if you had Christmas 365 days a year? It wouldn't be special, right?
Yeah.
So he was like, yeah, yeah. So I was like, oh, come on, man. I mean, and then it's not terrible, but I was disappointed. I mean, it's, you know, if you have an hour to kill, you know, when you're in the gym, you
watch it.
You watch it or plug it into your phone or whatever and listen to it on your headphones. But yeah, it's not, you know, but you have to see, this phoniness about, and, you know, Austin. And then, of course, they played up the whole thing, like you said, with the WrestleMania. I don't know, dude. I don't know if I want to see it. I don't know. I have mixed emotions about it. I don't know if I want to see Austin again at almost 50 years old. He looks in tremendous shape, you know. But
yeah.
Again, you know what? If it tells me a good story, then yeah, you know. But if it doesn't, then I can care less. So,
gotcha.
Do we have any do you have any news before I get into our questions and we take a break?
No, I don't have any news. I haven't really been online as much. right. And when I have.
That's fine. That's fine.
I've been looking at much wrestling stuff. I haven't really heard anything crazy going on except for Tommy Rogers passing on. That's about it.
Okay. We have questions. And I didn't even, like, I haven't been posting if you have any questions because we haven't been getting any questions. So the one day I don't post it, I get questions.
Yeah.
So the fans are picking up. Smart. Harry wants to know, Harlem Heat, best tag team entrance theme ever?
You know, funny enough, I was thinking about this, and I remember hearing Harlem Heat's theme song on an episode of Kids in the Hall.
Really?
And I was like, wow, you know, either Harlem Heat have gotten around, you know, the world to Canada for Kids in the Hall and their great show, or it's just a generic song that's just production music somewhere. And, you know, I can't say that theirs, like, is the best tag team entrance theme. I think that may belong to Demolition or Road Warriors or Midnight Express, one of them.
Yeah, I didn't mention Midnight Express, but they're in my top three. But might be the Road Warriors, Demolition, Hollywood Blondes, and the Midnight Express.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I did enjoy the Steiners when he came out to Welcome to the Jungle, you know?
But then everybody else came out to Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, but the Steiners did it first. I'm not, you know. Listen, the Fantastics came out to Sharp Dressed Man. So did Jimmy Garvin. Imitation's the best form of flattery. What am I to tell you? I don't write this shit. I just listen to it.
Yeah.
Scott wants to know, Stevie Ray signing a Legends contract recently with WWE. Harlem Heat Hall of Fame for next year? They are in Texas. That's where Harlem Heat's from. It would make sense. I don't care. Honestly, I like the Hall of Fame ceremony. Don't get me wrong. I love it, but I don't like the fact that I can't go physically go see it. You know?
Yeah.
I love the stories. I love the ceremony. I love that my wife loves it. That's like her favorite part of the year. But I like the fact that when I want to go see Wayne Gretzky enshrined, I go to Toronto. You know, when I want to go see Patrick Ewing and Michael Jordan's basketball shoes, I go to Springfield, Mass. If I want to see Chris Carter's jersey from Minnesota, I go to fucking Canton, Ohio. And if I want to see Roberto Clemente's gear, I go to fucking Cooperstown for baseball. So that's, for me, I want to see, you know, the physical building. They should do it. You know, it's 2015 already, you know. You've been doing this Hall of Fame thing for almost 20 years.
Yeah. You know?
So, anyway. I think that's it. Do you have any New Japan news from the Best of the Super Juniors?
No. I got to catch up, man. It's just like so little time, actually. This weekend, I'm going to be doing a 72-hour film shoot. I'm hard at work for New York Asian Film Festival, so I'll actually be gone end of June going into July. Probably won't be back until mid-July. So news on that. Have to have some guest hosts taking over.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Actually, as soon as we're done with the show, I'm helping out with, like, marketing and, working with all these different groups to do, like, ticket giveaways and shit like that. So,
You're not going to be here for the anniversary show?
I don't know if I'll be here for the anniversary show. When is it? What day is the anniversary?
Well, it's supposed to be July 3rd, but I'll be in D.C. I was going to make it July 1st, which was it's a show night. So,
well, you know what? I'm going to do my best to make it for the anniversary show.
All right, if you can't, you can't. But
yeah.
I know the film festival thing is important to you. So,
yep.
But
giving me more responsibility, put more weight on my shoulders.
So what does it mean? You get a tote bag now? Is that how it goes? Or?
No, I've been getting a tote bag. I might actually get paid.
So, all right. Well, that helps.
So that's a big deal.
Yeah, that helps.
I think they may be. I'm not going to talk about insider information on the festival. Yeah, but I might get paid, which is a great thing.
Yeah, don't break any Kung Fu kayfabe if you don't have to.
No, I don't have to.
Fucking fantastic. All right. I guess that's it. We'll take a quick break, plug our friends.
Yep.
And we'll come back. We've got a kick-ass throwback for you tonight.
This is a good one.
Yeah, it's a good match. I watched it twice, actually. once at work, and I watch it this afternoon before I picked up Junior from school. So,
before you welcomed him into a new day.
New day? All right. All right, my brother, let's take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We are live on rantemradio.com.
Yes, we are.
And we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Coming this summer to rantemradio.com.
No, I want this.
The food eating challenge of the century. Mr. X, Rage the Creator, and over 200 White Castles. Who will be victorious? Who will puke their fucking guts up? You'll have to find out at Castle Slam 2015. Coming this summer to rantemradio.com.
Yo, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. When you're done with our show, head back on over to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. That's right, the mothership, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. We have 10 amazing shows right now for your listening pleasure. We have the Neckbreaker Podcast, the Thursday Night Destruction with Dave Destruction from Pro Wrestling Syndicate, the Midnight Jury and their sister podcast, After Midnight, the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, the Apex Radio Podcast, part of Apex Wrestling Entertainment. Of course, you have the Turnbuckle Throwbacks with myself and Dave Megapowers. Two and a Half Wrestlers, Pat Buck, Kevin Matthews, Jay Silva, and Brian Myers. The King of the Indies Podcast with the OG of PMA himself, Mr. Kevin Gill. And, of course, the Shining Wizards. So what the hell are you waiting for? ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. It's entertainment here. Yo, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. When you're done with our show, head on over to rantemradio.com. That's right, Rant EM Radio, covering all your pop culture and pro wrestling needs with 10 amazing shows. How about Freaks and Effing Geeks, The Rant, Turnbuckle Throwbacks with myself and the Mega Powers, The Wrestling Call-In Show, The What Are You Reading Comic Book Show, That Awful Podcast, The Thursday Night Delight, The Rexplex, Rant and Wrestling, and the Lex Entertainment Experience. So what are you guys waiting for? Rant Entertainment Media, rantemradio.com. It's the opinions you love, the history you crave. It's Rant EM Radio.
Every Friday, the 80s and 90s are back on The Midnight Jury. Available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio, The Jury transports you back to the days of Walkmans, VHS, arcades, and malls. Covering the best in pop culture, pro wrestling, and horror, from reviews to interviews and everything in between, we want you to get on board every Friday and travel back to the last old school generation. The Midnight Jury is a production of WLWStudios.com and a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order.
Forget about that. You just brought up
Gary Hart will whip his ass.
Tony C just brought up Ike Turner. How awesome was Lawrence Fishburne in that movie?
Oh,
oh yeah.
Excellent.
I'm sorry to get off topic, but he was amazing.
Play that role. Nah. I got San Antonio. Nah. I can have you. Nah.
Ike said he only hit her once.
He beat her with a shoe.
Not even.
He said he only smacked her once.
He smacked her once, but he hit her with everything else.
I hit her with everything but the kitchen sink, but I'm saying.
Do you see that? You see that look in his eye?
Now he's more of a man than Rage.
Ooh, wait a minute now.
Oh, yes, works.
Wait a second. This is the co-host of the Wrestling Call-In Show. You
yes, works.
That was all so right. Disrespectful. Nah, I can't have you.
That's
you,
why your girl's, about, like, you that's why your girl's about to get eliminated from the Amazing Race.
You see that? I've never questioned your manhood, Rage.
Bullshit, you didn't, Surfer.
Tony.
You never ever questioned your manhood.
Trying to help out.
No, you did it. Yo, you always do it.
How?
The preceding announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. The Wrestling Call-In Show, every Saturday evening on RantEMRadio.com.
Yeah. All right, we're back.
I can dig it, sucker.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, Cyrus.
You know what this music reminds me of?
What?
Like any of those 90s shows, like 90210 or like whatever the other ones were. I forget the other ones. Melrose Place, maybe.
Yeah.
When they're all in a club together.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this sounds like.
Remember Club Song 74.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is just like production music. It was on an episode of Kids in the Hall.
I'm not putting it past it. I'm sure it was. Nonetheless, it is the legendary Harlem Heat.
Yeah, man.
Multi-tag tag team champions. Booker T, Stevie Ray. Charismatic. Agility, power.
Black and bold.
That's right. And they
black and strong, just how I like my coffee.
Sister Sherry. Love Sister Sherry.
He was not a part of this event.
No.
It was a tour.
You know what? You know what's cool about going back and looking at this stuff? Like, I know WCW had a bunch of supercards, right?
Yeah.
From, like, the Collision in Korea, right?
Yeah.
And it had something else, but they always did tours in Japan, but you never saw this stuff because it was never advertised. So you don't see these tapes till 10, 20 years later, or clips till 20 years later, because, like, you know.
Yeah, so, like, what was it, yesterday, just by chance, I found Shinya Hashimoto, who's, you know, going to be in a bunch of these matches that we're talking about, and he had a match against Oz, and I'm like, Oz? Kevin Nash was Oz in New Japan? Are you kidding me? When did that happen?
They probably did one tour of Japan when Dusty gave him the gimmick.
Uh-huh.
And he was green. You know, how would you like to go to Japan?
Yeah.
I could see the conversation. Come here, big Kevin. Let me tell you something, baby. Let's see here. I got you doing this gimmick here with the wig and whatnot. But we going to Japan in 2 weeks. I need a big man for the tour.
Oh, I can do it, Dusty. I can do it.
I know you can, Daddy. I know you can. So you're going to go over there and fight Shinya Hashimoto, who looked like his neck like a pack of hot dogs. The Japanese Floyd Evans, if you will. And that's how the conversation goes. He goes to Japan as Oz for like a week.
Yeah.
And he comes back. They realize the gimmick is shitty, and then he becomes Vinny Vegas. So he had one shitty, he went from one shitty gimmick to another.
Yeah, it's just like, what was it? I remember when New Japan was, you know, establishing themselves more on YouTube several years ago. They would just, like, they would have, like, a match of, like, the week or something like that, like a throwback match. And it would have some, like, random, like, teams. Like, the Nasty Boys were going against, like, some teams. I'm like, the Nasty Boys? When were they there? And actually, what was it? I found out when, when Guerrero was first coming to WCW. I think like there's like a bunch of appearances he did where his like eyebrows were shaved.
Jesus.
And it was because of the Nasty Boys who shaved his eyebrows in
as
Japan.
A rib.
It's like, all right, Nasty Boys causing trouble worldwide.
Oh boy.
And what was it? I remember War when Jericho was in War, I guess like occasionally they would send some WWF guys, because I know Ric Flair would defend the WWF title in War. Also, the Warlord was wrestling in War as well. So was, Earthquake? Just like random guys. When the hell did this happen? Because none of that, well, I think even for, Pro Wrestling Illustrated and all that kind of stuff, they weren't covering all that stuff, so.
Right, and I think what they were probably doing was they would probably take one or two main champions and then send the rest guys that really aren't involved in major storylines.
Yeah.
And be like, all right, hey, go to Japan, job to these today guys, be like the big, they would, like ECW would, like, see, ECW, like, really invaded Japan when he went to Japan.
Yeah.
ECW went there as heels. You know what I'm saying? They didn't fuck around. Like, when they went there, they were hated. Like, nobody liked ECW in Japan. And that was the best.
Yeah.
All their publications, I was listening to, I forget who it was. I was at an indie show last summer, and I was talking to one of the vendors, he had the table next to Feinstein's, and he was telling me, he goes, I have all these programs from Japan, he goes, but you could just tell that when you watch all the video, like, they were just hated. Like, even Tommy Dreamer and Sandman, all their best guys were hated,
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be. That's the way
it should
be.
Well, it's, it's not their country. And, why not? Like, it's just like another way of getting over.
Yeah. I think it's cool. It'll never happen like that again, but
probably not.
Yeah, no, not with society the way it is. No. All right. So, you know what? We have, hold on a second here. Let me, I haven't played my fucking throwback of the week clip lately, man. I want to bring it back for a second because I miss it.
All right.
And hold on a minute. Let's play that real quick.
And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
Yeah, man. All right. So, our throwback of the week takes us to 1996, 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. I thought that was a nice twist as well. Hyper Battle Tour.
It was a tour. Now, is it the same thing as the G1, or is it?
No, it's just a tour. It's kind of like, I guess like best way I can explain it is, wrestling Dontaku that happened not too long ago. They have several, cards leading up to that, and they'll call it, Road to Wrestling Dontaku. So it's basically more or less just a tour, and it's, centered around, I guess, like a bigger event. But I think, especially back then, it was just a tour. That was it. They gave it a name. It's like Wings going on tour. Whatever, names of tours that Wings have gone on, or the Appetite for Destruction tour.
When you said Wings, you meant Paul McCartney's Wings.
Yeah, Paul McCartney's Wings. So, you had to throw some random group in there.
Fucking Wings. It's awesome.
If anybody even went to any of those shows. But anyway, they would give the tour name, and they would just go around, and it would have like a specific set of wrestlers that would go around for that tour. Harlem Heat were a part of this. Wild Pegasus, a.k.a. Chris Benoit, was a part of it. It was kind of, I don't want to say it was too WCW heavy, but it was, it had quite a bit of WCW guys. One of the matches that we're covering tonight was actually a tournament final to crown the first ever WCW Cruiserweight Champion. So this tour actually holds some significance, as far as titles go, as the first champion was crowned during then. And in general, it just has like a lot of classic New Japan wrestlers that a lot of wrestling fans in America are familiar with. And this is just strong style at its finest.
Harlem Heat were... Were they newly formed at this point? They were...
No, they were established for 93.
93, right. Okay.
In WCW, they were Harlem Heat in 93.
Right.
They were the Ebony Express before that, of course.
Yeah, of course. In Global, right.
Or Ebony Experience.
The Ebony Experience, right. And then, okay.
It wasn't just an express. It was a complete experience of these two black men.
As we covered Harlem Heat during Black History Month, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about Shogun, though, for a minute, man.
And all right.
I think for some reason, Shogun goes... I'm speaking of Shinya Hashimoto, of course. Yeah. Hashimoto always... Not, I don't say... You and I don't overlook him. But no. When people... When wrestling fans talk about Japanese wrestling, they always bring up Muda. They always bring up, you know, Chono. Masada, Chono, Kawada, you know, Kenta Kobashi. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't bring up Shinya Hashimoto.
Yeah, and he was part of the Three Musketeers, which was... It wasn't just a team, but it was, you know, him, Muda, and Chono grew up, you know, in the system together, and these guys were best friends, and they referred to themselves as the
Three Musketeers.
Three Musketeers, and yeah. Each of them, you know, were IWGP champions. I know.
Well,
I don't know if Chono was an All Japan Triple Crown champion.
I don't know, but he's only one. Him, Muda, and Kojima were the only three guys to have the NWA Heavyweight Championship, the Triple Crown Heavyweight Championship, and the IWGP Championship.
Yeah.
And he's... I mean, they constantly compare him to guys like Kawada, but he's like... You want to talk stiff. He's the stiffest. You know, in my opinion, he's the stiffest. You know, he is the epitome of strong style.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the guy who, like, reminds you... That this is where, like, he, not that I don't want to say he originates it, but I want to say he was that constant grinder. He was the guy who just kept it on the forefront.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes any sense. But he had, and also, as of this year, I think, I may be wrong, but he had the longest IWGP title reign of almost 500 days.
That was, right now the longest title reign belongs to Tanahashi.
So, it's, all right, so...
Number two is, I believe it's Nagata. I believe Hashimoto is, like, in the, you know, top.
It said as of this year he had the longest at 489 days.
Okay.
So, I mean, he tragically... Not say tragically.
No, I'm actually probably... I'm thinking more of title reigns. Tanahashi has the most reigns. I think number two is actually Fujinami.
I'm talking about the longest reign, not as
longest
many
reign.
Reigns.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, my bad.
He had like the, he's like the CM Punk reign. He had that 400 plus day, you know, fucking almost 500 days as a IWGP champion. They, like Dave mentioned, he grew up with Chono and Muda and, started, he made his pro debut in 88, I believe. Wrestled all the way up to 2000. Wrestled for 0-1, which was with Steve Corino and all those guys.
Yeah.
Gary Steele was there. Nathan Jones, Heidenreich was there.
Nate Jones.
He wrestled Dan Severin. He wrestled a bunch of guys there.
What's his name? Fucking Carino for the NWA title.
Yeah. And also when he was in Pro Zero, 0-1, they actually had a reunion of the Three Musketeers.
Mm.
You know, sadly Hashimoto died of a brain aneurysm like 8 days after his 40th birthday.
Wow.
He
was also in a movie called the. American title is Oh My Zombie Mermaid, which I believe is actually on Netflix if you want to see him act.
Oh, I definitely want to see that.
It's a batshit crazy horror movie, so I highly recommend it.
He was well loved, well respected. They had a bunch of tribute shows for him. Dating back to from when he died, even to as late as 2010. Like I said, very epitome of strong style. Had some crazy violent matches. Sick jumping spike DDT.
Yes.
Sick. And you want to talk? Listen,
sick is an understatement.
Yeah, and you know what? I say that Coco Beware to me had the best brainbuster, straight up brainbuster. But yeah. Hashimoto hit the vertical. Now Hashimoto had a vertical, like a vertical drop.
Yeah, this was like a predecessor to the Bloody Sunday from Finn Balor.
Yes, yes. He was a big dude too. Like he looked. I hate to say this, but he looked like
King Elvis Presley.
Yeah, that or like the guy that would cut your sushi at the steakhouse. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
the
it's
guy
like,
who cuts your sushi at the
restaurant. Yeah, I wouldn't tell him that. He was fucking 300 pounds.
He's saying that he works at Arang.
Dude, he was my height, and he was pretty much my height and weight, but he looked dumpy, you know?
Maybe he knew how to do those special fancy tricks at the hibachi restaurant.
Dude, I don't know, but when you look at him, you don't think anything of it, but you get him in the ring, and he cuts your face off. He's that kind of fun.
You know, the only person I saw him really have trouble with was Vader. And there's actually one match where he beats Vader by countout and just vomits in the ring after the match. Because Vader just, like, stuck it to this guy. But that was, like, the only dude that I've ever really seen him, like, it was kind of like, oh, shit, I'm in for some trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. But... You know, passes down in the room. Hello. Oh, wow. Look at that. Stu from Indy Corners up with us at 3 o'clock in the morning over there. Shout out. All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. Chat room's getting a little bit livelier. So, yeah, Hashimoto at this time was the tag team champion of IWGP with Junji Harada or Junji Harada.
Junji,
whatever way you want to pronounce it.
Junji the dog.
Yeah, Junji was, he's an older wrestler. Our old school wrestling fans would know him better as Super Strong Machine when the WWF ran that machine gimmick when Andre had to wear a mask.
Yeah.
When he had the Heenan
actually,
family.
The other dude that was with him was Bill Eadie, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and then they also used, I think Blackjack Mulligan wore a mask too. With them,
so did Piper and Hogan.
Yeah, Piper Machine, Hogan Machine. It was Strong Machine, Giant Machine. There was a bunch of machines actually.
But he is the original.
He is the original. He is the original Super Strong Machine. He wrestled for Stu Hart in Calgary in the late '70s. He was. Well, no, yeah, Blackjack Mulligan was the big machine. He was the super machine. Bill Eadie was the super machine. Bill Eadie used his gimmick here, and they split it. Like when they went to Japan, when the machines went to Japan, he was the machine, super strong machine. And in the States, Bill Eadie used his gimmick. So yeah,
yeah.
He didn't lose his mask until the mid-90s. And then he took on another. Then he became the Black Strong Machine, and then the Super Love Machine. Yeah. So
I think he still wrestles as Super Strong Machine. Like they pull him out every once in a while.
He still wrestles, apparently.
Yeah.
He wrestled. What's the crew he's with Yuji Nagata and. Fale, well, it was Fale, but not anymore. It was Inoue, Fale, and Nagata. They were called it's called Blue Justice something, but I forgot the name of it in Japanese.
I don't recall offhand. I just remember just Blue Justice, but that's more Nagata's.
That was the crew. That was the crew he was part of. And here's a cool fun fact for you that I wrote down. In 89, Nintendo put out a Tecmo World Wrestling, which was great. I love that game. And the final boss was the Blue King, Earl of Doom, and it was loosely based on his character, known as the Super Strong Machine. It looks just
and,
like...
what was it? I don't remember what it was called, but whatever WCW for Nintendo was, they had it in Japan, but instead of, what's it called, the WCW Master, it was actually... The machine. I think it was like Andre is the giant machine or something like that.
It's dope.
Yeah.
Fuck, I love the machines. It's such a simple gimmick, but yet it was, for the time, it was so good, you know?
Yeah. You know? There's no real story to it. It's not like they're an actual machine or anything like that.
No, but it was just like...
It's like the look. It's just a very classic...
Mask.
Look. And yeah. It's like, if you know a little bit about... If you know something about old school wrestling, you know about the machines.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's a nice tribute to the mask, and I think that crew did it well.
Yeah. You
know? They did. And Harada... He had a sick move. He had the hammerlock suplex he had, and he had a two finishing moves that involved the hammerlock. He had a DDT,
yeah,
and a hammerlock suplex,
yeah.
But and he came out to Van Halen, light up the sky. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So can't knock that hustle. So. All right, so
not one iota.
They are the current. They were at this time the world tag team champions. I believe they had beaten Scott Norton and somebody else. If I think that's what I was reading before I started taking my notes. But they were defending against the Harlem Heat. Dude, this was a good match. How did you come across this?
Just by chance. That particular, what is it? I think it's like under the name of Real Hero for Daily Motion. He's just like one of these dudes who, you know, posts, you know, all the latest TV shows in Japan for wrestling, you know, whether it's Noah or All Japan or Stardom.
Yeah,
or
he put
Brave
up
a, or
he
any
put,
of these groups.
He's got a bunch of stuff on there.
Yeah, he's just one of these dudes who's constantly pulling up. New stuff, and occasionally there's some throwback stuff on there, and I happen to catch this, and I'm like, full event. Well, not the full event. It just has, like, select matches from that tour, and I remember seeing the Benoit matches a while back, because High Spots put out this collection called Wild Pegasus, The Last Ride, and I guess this was, like, Benoit's last Japan tour for New Japan, and I remember seeing those matches, and there were some other matches attached to it, and I was like, all right, we got our throwback.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who was escorting Booker T and Stevie Ray to the ring. I was trying to ID them. I couldn't see who they were. I was trying to see who, if they were anybody famous. And I
didn't even notice that there was somebody bringing them to the ring.
Yeah, two guys, and then, of course, one of the young boys, you know, opens the ring for them and shit like that, but yeah. So now Harlem Heat, the monster team from WCW, doing the tour. Now they're fighting Harada and Hashimoto for the tag team championship. And if you go on Daily Motion, like Dave mentioned, this guy has a bunch of Hashimoto matches against Steven Regal. There's one against Kojima. When he was champ, he defends against Scott Flash Norton. Nakano, he fights. There's one versus Ric Flair. So, I think I have that one.
I think that one's actually from the G1.
I think that's from G1, yeah. I think
Ric Flair did one of the G1s, I think 95, 96.
Yeah, fights Liger. And then him and Ogawa versus Hiroshi Tenzan and Scott Norton. Him and Chono, him and Hase. That's good. Just really good shit on here on this page.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, let's get into the match, shall we? Take it
yes,
away.
Yes, we shall.
This is your forte. So why don't you open up the floor, sir?
Yeah, this is an interesting match because, you know, first of all, Harlem Heat are towering over anybody significantly in that arena, not just their opponents. God. So I was like, I wonder how this is gonna go because, you know, Japanese style and American style are just so significantly different, and. You know, they start off with Shinya Hashimoto and Stevie Ray just running into each other just to test each other's, like, you know, strength and balance. And, you know, Stevie Ray gets the better of them. And, of course, Shinya Hashimoto, like, brings it back. You know, this is really best way I can describe this match. This is straight up strong style. A lot of guys doing the same moves to each other over and over again. Slamming each other, clotheslining each other, suplexing each other endlessly. But I want to say that the true star of this match was Booker T, because there are just certain things that he's doing that is awing the crowd. And, you know, as we all know with the Japanese crowd, especially back then, they were just super, super quiet. So if you got a reaction out of the crowd, you were doing something right. And, you know, Booker T is hitting the spin-a-rooney, doing gigantic leapfrogs, you know, over Harada during the match. And the fans are just eating it up. They love everything that this guy is doing.
Well, I like I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I like the fact that all the guys in here, and I'm not a big Stevie Ray guy, but I like them in Harlem Heat. But
yeah,
every guy in this, well, all four competitors took they sold really well. You know, like it was like you get like 12 or 13 minutes into the match, and like Hashimoto, like pretty much clothesline Stevie Ray over the, you know, over the top rope.
Yeah.
And it was like Stevie ate it, but like you could see like he was like, oh man, you know. Well, I'm sorry, it was Booker T. I'm sorry, not Stevie Ray. He clotheslines him and like Booker just takes it. But Hashimoto was just like menacing, you know, like when he gets the upper hand, it's like, you know, and then they go right back to the working on the, they drag him to the corner and they work him over.
Yeah,
and at one point he tags in Harada, who does like a belly like a back flop on him, you know, like a,
didn't he do like a senton or something?
Yeah,
he did
like a half a senton on him.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. But yeah, you know, again, like slaps and kicks, like Harlem Heat just blended right in with them. You know, didn't have to change up a bit. You know.
You know, I think, you know, the big appeal for wrestlers going to Japan, especially guys like Harlem Heat, is that they get to have a match. As plain and simple as that sounds, like, you know, if you're the undercard or mid-card for WCW Worldwide or WCW Pro or Main Event, you're not really going to be able to perform at the level that you want to. And, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, outside of just, you know, referring to themselves as pro wrestlers, you know, they're also artists. You know, they're coming up with the spots, you know, before the match. You know, they're working with each other. The ring is literally the canvas, you know, for what they're about to create. And, you know, we've all seen some shitty matches, but when we've seen some classics, it's like, wow, this is incredible.
Right.
And so I'm sure for these guys, it's just a relief for them that, you know, they probably have like a good chunk of time to work with. And they're able to lay into each other and they're able to sell for each other. Like specifically that clothesline spot that you mentioned with Hashimoto clothesline and Booker T out of the ring. Like he kicks him and then like he just like when he clotheslines him out of the ring, it's like with authority.
Yeah, Booker T takes a beating though. Like two, 3 minutes takes a beating.
Yeah,
you know, and then like finally after a reverse whip, and then he gets like Stevie on a he gets a reverse whip on Harada. Stevie Ray gets the knee up while he's outside, and yeah, finally gets the upper hand. But then he goes right, and then what does Stevie Ray do after not being tagged in for 5 minutes? Goes right to the throat. You know, like it was like, and then. Try to choke someone and goes for a pin. Like, it's like nothing was pretty. And, you know, obviously there's a language barrier. And I'm not saying Harada and Hashimoto didn't speak any English. But like you said, they didn't get a chance to choreograph any of this shit.
They had to call it in a ring.
They see these guys once a year. They, you know, they exchange pleasantries, I'm sure.
They're probably, most likely, they're not even hanging out.
No.
During the show, because I know that they it's probably at that time they definitely had separate locker rooms. I believe they still do have separate locker rooms for the Japanese and the English wrestlers. Occasionally they'll, you know, mix it up with one another, but not often. And chances are, you know, the American guys are just hanging out with the American guys after the show. Yeah. And that's that. So it's like there's probably some sort of communication between them at the show, but I'm sure in the ring, they're calling it in the ring best that they can.
And that's like the first thing I thought about after you sent me the match. Like, there's no, like, you know, it's a little better now, the communication in Japan.
Because
there's more guys there now, like regularly. Like I'm pretty sure like the Young Bucks and Alex Shelley and the Bullet Club guys, they've all gotten to the point where they either speak a little bit or they just know their opponents better.
Well, I think also too they're also teaching those guys how to speak English too.
They
so
have to.
That helps out a
lot.
Yeah,
but of course they do. But you know what though? There's a ton of lack of communication back in the day.
Yeah.
Like even in the 70s when Andre and them would go over, it was like they went there once a year, maybe twice. It didn't really start up until guys like Brody and Hanson and Vader and Bam Bam, they all started going there regularly. You know, it was like these guys didn't go there all the time, and they put on these classic matches because you know what? It's only one way.
Yeah.
Strong style. And like the you know, obviously the high flying mask guys, you know, adapted the luchador style, but even those guys, I've seen Liger do strong style. I've seen Liger fight MMA. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not far fetched, but again, crazy language barrier, and they put on a hell of a match.
Well, hey, what was it? Plus at the end of the day, they have to make it as convincing as possible. I remember, quick story. There's Clash of the Champions on the network, where the main event was going to be Road Warriors and Tenryu against Sting, Hayes, and JYD.
That's right, and then because that's when they turned on Dusty, and they had Tenryu as the sixth man because it was initially it was the Road Warriors and Dusty, you know.
And what was it? There was like a storyline during Clash of the Champions where Sting, JYD, and Hayes get locked into like a part of the building, and you know Tenryu and Road Warriors, they were also working for Baba with All Japan Pro Wrestling, and Baba was like, no, there's no way that we're not going to show this match on air in Japan, and you got to make it work out somehow, because there's no way that Road Warriors or Tenryu are going to look stupid because you want to do some sort of like American, storyline for your show. Granted, you know, they're also signed to WCW, but, you know, keep in mind, Japanese press, they're at like all these shows. You know, like if you look at a Japanese magazine, even today, if there's a Japanese dude who's, you know, swinging by America for whatever, there's some sort of, photographer there that's, you know, covering the event.
Yeah. Now with the internet and phones and shit, those pictures are going over instantaneously.
Yeah, you know? But back then there was no internet.
No,
but there was still some sort of photographer from some magazine
taking
over
pictures,
there. That
taking
pictures,
yeah, taking pictures, going back to the room, developing them on his phone, calling the promoter, calling Baba probably, or who one of Baba's handlers or whatever it is.
Because a lot of those matches would get televised in Japan, and in addition, it would also be on, in the magazines too.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why, Hanson and Brody had the reputation that they did, because when they came back to the U.S., it's kind of like, well, no, I'm not letting this other dude get over on me because I have my reputation to uphold in Japan, because if I lose to Coco Beware, then I don't got a job, and I'm not going to be looking like a badass once I get to back to Japan.
Right. And I think that's one of the reasons why, because there was a rumor going around that they offered the E offered AJ Styles a contract recently again, and he turned it down.
Yeah.
That's a rumor, and I could see now after him winning the IWGP Championship and him doing his Ring of Honor run, I could see why he wouldn't take the contract now and go to, like, NXT. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just the prestige of that belt. I don't care what anybody tells me right now. The IWGP Championship is the second best recognized title in pro wrestling right now.
Yeah.
Better than Ring of Honor, better than fucking Impact, better than, any other title that's on television.
Yeah.
Next to WWE.
You know what was it? There was a replica of the title, the IWGP heavyweight title that Styles is holding right now. There was a replica on eBay recently, and it went for $6,500.
I saw it up close. I told you last summer.
Yeah.
And it was breathtaking.
Yeah, it's a beautiful belt. So there's a lot of effort put into that. And the replica looks exactly like
the
real deal, which is probably why it's getting $6,500 for it.
Absolutely.
But anyway, for this match that we got off track with, Booker T's holding, Stevie Ray is holding on to Hashimoto. He gets super kicked by accident by Booker T.
Yep.
Hashimoto, you know, big dude, still gets some hang time and hits Stevie Ray with the leg lariat, Stevie Ray rather, and pulls him up for the brainbuster, elevated DDT for the win. And they retain the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship.
Well, about 20 or 21 minutes in, there was a missed spot. I think Booker T was going for like a press or a drop, a leg drop or something.
Yeah.
Hashimoto gets up, dude, and just repeatedly kicks the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And not just like, there was no stomp on the mat. Nothing. He just walked up.
He just laid
into him like multiple kicks, and you're like, "Whoa!" Like this, I rewound them. Like that's fucking awesome, man. It was epic.
Hashimoto, like for big dude, like he's very flexible. He gets that leg up there, and he just kind of, it's like he's putting his like leg and foot through the guy's chest.
It's just he was such a like. Hashimoto tells a really good story in the ring, man. It's like when you watch him, it's like, oh man. And a lot. I mean, listen, we know a lot of wrestlers that do that. They tell a really good story in the ring. But Hashimoto was a guy like Kevin Steen. Doesn't look like the athlete of the day, like a Dusty Rhodes. Doesn't look like the athlete of the day, but at the end of the day, these guys do broadways. They do strong style. They're charismatic. Hashimoto. Once that headband came off, once that Shogun garb came off, it was a wrap, dude.
Well, his belly might be a little bit big.
His hiney may be a little bit big, but he's bad. He's very bad. And he was a bad dude, man.
Yeah, man.
It was like just – and you know what? When these guys went to Japan, the guy Jin I'm talking about in particular, they weren't winning these matches. Hardly ever. And I think I think just the tour itself, and I think just the camaraderie, but I also, more importantly, I think it's, for the younger guys, I think it's them paying their dues.
Yeah.
Like, you go there, it's like, okay, all right. And this is what Vader did, man. Vader was like, at one point, Vader was a champion on like three different continents. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, guys like that just love the hustle, you know?
Well, you know, I think it's also, you know, trial by fire. You know, a lot of these guys, they're, you know, you can only learn so much in your little bubble, you know, in WCW, and you're wrestling the WCW crowds. And I'm sure that's the same reason why Oz was sent to New Japan as well. It's kind of like, you know, either you're a name and you can help draw while you're over there, or two, you're just a greenhorn and you got to learn one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I think with Japan, you know, it's either sink or swim. And there's a lot of dudes who've been over there who had one tour and, you know, didn't come back. You know, Michael Hayes is one of those guys. I forgot who he may have been with All Japan, but I think that dude just had one chance and blew it, and then he was gone.
He admitted it, though.
Yeah.
He admitted he blew it.
Yeah.
And I think you get tested. You know, it's the same way when the rookies came in back in the day and they would make you carry their bags, make you drive them around. They would they'd beat you up in the ring, like for real, you know, stuff like that. But more importantly, though, this was a good match. Like, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. Like, it was almost like they told a story when there was no story, you know? Yeah. These guys could have did a program, to be honest with you. I thought anyway. They could have did a nice little run. Like, they could have had like a nice, they could have changed belts twice over if they wanted to, you know?
Yeah, man.
So
there was another Harlem Heat match.
Yep.
Which was significantly shorter. I think it was only like 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it was Harlem Heat going against Kensuke Sasaki. who we knew as a U.S. champion in WCW. And his tag team partner was Osamu Nishimura, who was he's actually a student of Dory Funk Jr. He's wrestled quite a bit in the U.S., including Chikara, believe it or not. I was really happy to see him in Chikara because actually my first, funny enough, Nishimura, I actually know first and foremost from a movie, a Japanese horror movie, comedy horror movie called Calamari Wrestler, where there's a wrestler who...
is a squid?
Who, yeah, he gets killed in the ring and he reincarnates as a squid wrestler.
Oh, great.
And Osamu Nishimura is the guy who dies in the ring and reincarnates as a squid wrestler to get revenge for the guy that killed him and win the championship belt, of course.
Did that win a Jap Academy Award?
I'm sure it won awards somewhere, but...
what do they call the Academy Awards in Japan?
Something like that, yeah. Sure, that's like classic theater over there.
Yeah.
But that's how I first knew about Osamu Nishimura, but... which is funny because, you know, outside of that movie, the guy's whole persona is just strict wrestling. You know, this is, you know, if you're familiar with Dory Funk Jr.'s work, he's not as exciting as Terry Funk. He's more mat-based wrestling.
He's a tactician, yeah. And his dojo.
Yeah, this guy is, you know, besides Hoss Funk, give me a break. The guy is like, he'll have like the long, boring match where it's just like leg locks and, you know, submissions and stuff like that. So,
right, but Dory Funk spent 30 years, you know, training wrestlers and in his dojo. They called it dojo because he was one of those guys that went to Japan and just perfected the strong style.
Yeah, it was the Funkin Dojo.
The Funkin Dojo, yeah.
Yeah. And listen, Dory Funk Jr. is still going over to All Japan to do matches.
Appearances. Him and Terry made an appearance, was that last year or 2013?
It's like a year ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I saw that.
These guys are still hanging and banging. Whoa.
Because they're well respected. I think it's a sign of the times. You know, now it's more commonplace that good gaijin wrestlers are going there, man.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's, you know, as a wrestling fan, it's really fun to see that because you can see the contrast of styles, and then when they come back to the States, especially the Ring of Honor guys, man. Guys like Fish, O'Reilly, Taven, Bennett, you know, these guys go there and they fucking... Mike Bennett had an amazing tour of Japan recently.
Yeah.
When they won the tag championship, him and Taven.
Taven, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, it was just like a blessing that Adam Cole got hurt. Because, you know, Mike Bennett's one of those guys, like I told you, he was waiting to break out, and he did. And this is, again, this probably put Harlem Heat over, as, you know, all the great tag teams went through Japan in one way or another, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, it's trial by fire, you know, and this match, granted it's shorter, it's about like 8 minutes long, it's no less like impactful than the almost 30-minute match that they had with Hashimoto and Harada. And, you know, I bring up, you know, Osamu Nishimura, too, not just because I saw him in a crazy movie, but the guy's the star of this match, and he's just beating the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Stiff as fuck. Like, he had a really beautiful German suplex during the match. Like, this was like a perfect German suplex, if I may say so myself. And, you know, he finishes off Booker T getting pinned again with a perfect Northern Lights suplex. And I say perfect because there's only two guys who I've ever seen do it right. And it's him and the innovator of the Northern Lights suplex, and that's Hiroshi Hase. And I say perfect because I see a lot of guys who do the Northern Lights suplex and they don't hook the arms.
Yeah, you know what? I it's funny you say that because Benoit is the guy who sometimes gets it right.
Yeah.
Like, he does it perfectly, and then there were days where he just doesn't. Just depends on who he's fighting. Like, especially, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah, finish your point.
But yeah, like, to your point with Benoit and a lot of guys, whenever I see a lot of guys do the Northern Lights suplex. They don't hook the arms. So, like, when they do it, it just seems like a suplex. And it's like, why are they trying to make this a pin? Because the guy can easily get his shoulder up. But Hiroshi Hase and Osamu Nishimura hook the arms. So when they flip the guy over, like, they can't, like, move their arms. So they're locked into the position. So if you want to see a perfect Northern Lights suplex the way that it's supposed to be done, watch this match with Harlem Heat, Kensei Sasaki, and Osamu Nishimura. It's a very short match, but they beat the shit out of each other, which is going to be a common theme for the rest of this throwback. And you get to see a perfectly executed Northern Lights suplex.
Yeah, again, it's just, you know, and we talk about Japan a lot lately, the last year or so, only because of the resurgence and... you know, but you look at the classic stuff, and it's like apples and oranges. You know, and these guys, it's not pretty, but it's so fun to watch. Because, and the only thing I get disappointed in is some of these, like, well, these didn't have any really bad finishes, but, you know, my only knock on Japan wrestling is that they put on these fucking 5-star matches with shit finishes, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of hard because they pull out all the stops during the match. So when it gets time to the finish, you know, sometimes it's not as impactful as like how the rest of the match went down. You know,
yeah, that's why I'm depending on guys like Okada and Tanahashi to not do that no more. You know, they you know, or Nakamura, don't do that no more. You know, they don't have to. You want to wrestle for 25 minutes. You've already got you've piqued my interest the first 10 minutes in, so you've got me. You now I've invested my time into the match, but you know, don't blow smoke up my asshole and tell me it's a chimney. And when you come to the finish, you know, don't do that to me. You know what I'm saying? And then like do this like a bullshit leg lift or like a nonsense clothesline or a botched fucking body press or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Or botched, like you say, Northern Lights or something like that. You know, give me
the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, I want everything, man. Give me the whole fucking.
When you finish off, you want the what's the fucking molten lava brownie at the end?
If you do those chain restaurants, yeah, that's a good thing. You know, try not to do that no more. But yeah, once in a while,
or the apple crumble kind of guy.
Exactly. 2 scoops of ice cream at the buffet. You know what I'm saying? Right. Yeah. But that's pretty much it, man. That was the 90s. And if you watch anything from Japan in the 90s, it's what you got. You got super strong stuff.
There's one match on this thing that I'd like to get into next that was you put it perfectly. You couldn't have said it any better for any of these matches. They weren't pretty.
No.
You know, it wasn't like this graceful ballet that you see with some of these juniors matches, but there was one tag match on here, and I was just like, wow, this is just like a butt ugly match. But at the same time, it's like, wow, how are these guys just like able to fucking continue with anything that they're doing? It just seemed like, I don't know, just like it just seemed like everybody who was in this match was just stubborn and wanted to do the same moves to each other and hurt each other like the most, like, you know, stiffest way manner. And that was the Yuji Nagata teaming with Riki Choshu going against Masa Saito and Masahiro Chono.
Yeah.
And this match was just stiff. Riki Choshu, like, his finisher is, one of his finishers is the lariat.
Yeah.
And he is just hitting everyone with lariats the entire match. It's like, that's your finisher. It's like, nah, I'm just going to continuously hit, you know, Masa Saito and Chono with lariats the entire match.
And Masa Saito is the elder statesman. Yeah. So, like, he's like,
Fuji's old tag team partner.
Yeah. But, like, Masa Saito is, like, the fucking... He's another guy who epitomizes the strong style. He won't even leave the mat. I don't think I've ever seen Saito on a turnbuckle.
Like, no.
I don't think his feet ever left the mat. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was that kind of strong style, you know?
He was a big dude, man. He was fucking massive. Hit some massive traps, some big shoulders, big arms.
He was always a heel, too.
Yeah,
always. Saito was always
even
a heel.
Even in Japan, the guy was a heel.
Yeah, yeah. So was Chono, though.
Yeah.
Chono was
always... No, Chono, when he first started, he was a good guy. It wasn't until... till NWO came around when he became a bad guy.
I never like, well, yeah, I guess.
He was Luthez's
protege. Right.
Protege,
you're right. I stand corrected. I remember that.
Yeah, so he was Mr. Wrestling in a way. But this match was just kind of like lariats and kicks and slams. I'm pretty much telling you every move that happened in this, and there's like one point in the match where Chono, you know, puts on the STF, which he learned from Luthez, and on Nagata and Choshu, I believe. And he just keeps putting it on. No, I think it was just Nagata. He just kept putting the STF on him, and then Choshu would come in the ring and you know, kick him to break up the hold.
Yeah.
And then he would just go back to it. Yeah. And this like went on like four times in a row. Until Chono was like, all right, you know,
I've had enough.
I'm just going to do the Yakuza kick over and over again. And he did that to Riki Choshu and gets the pin. It was not pretty. It was just, this was like the slab of beef match. One of them, at least, of the night.
I like when we have a slab of beef match tonight.
Yeah. Just big, thick dudes hitting the shit out of each other.
Yeah. Fun stuff, man.
Yeah, man.
Really fun stuff.
Man. What was another match on here I'd like to... oh, my God. This was another just cavalcade of hurt. The Carnival of Pain.
Cavalcade of Hurt, Carnival of Pain.
A 2 out of 3 falls 8-man tag match featuring Otani, who you may know from WCW.
Of course.
Taka Michinoku.
Of course.
Who's the wrestlers? Kanemoto.
Okay.
I don't know, why is that name? Koji Kanemoto, who was Tiger Mask 3.
He's Tiger Mask, yeah.
And Tokimitsu Ishikawa, who is... I don't know how to explain his gimmick. He's in... He's now with Minoru Suzuki, Suzuki-gun. He's this dude who just has like a really long beard, mustache, looks like a character out of a Studio Ghibli film. Has like the friggin' aluminum foil like iron glove
that
he uses on guys. And this is him, you know, in his salad days in New Japan. And they're going against a stacked, if Otani's team wasn't already stacked, going against an even more stacked team of Gran Hamada, one of the junior legends, El Samurai, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Chris Benoit. And this was the best way I can say this was... oh my God! It's as if, you know, Benoit, Liger, one of those guys, you know, beat up like Otani, Taka Michinoku, Koji Kanemoto, Ishikawa for the lunch money, or something. How's that phrase go? I remember it now. It was like as if they were beating up on Benoit's team, like they owed him money. It was like, whoa, like everything that was being done to Benoit's team, like they were definitely like the Rock and Roll Express in this match.
Was Benoit, so Benoit didn't have the Pegasus gimmick at this point? He was just Benoit?
He was Wild Pegasus.
He was Wild Pegasus, okay.
Pegasus Kid is when he had the mask. Wild Pegasus is when he was without the mask.
Right, okay.
And he actually lost the mask to Jushin Thunder Liger. So now they're on the same team. Going against Otani's team, and there's like a point in the beginning of the match where Otani is just like, I don't know, I guess he's calling Benoit a fag or something like that, and just Benoit just slaps the shit out of him, and it's Pier 6 Donnybrook going down in this ring, and I don't know, man, like everybody was just pulling out all the stops during this tag match. two out of three falls, went for about a half hour.
It was like a lucha match.
Yeah, it was like a, it was almost like a lucha. It was like a strong style lucha match.
Yeah.
There's a point where Taka is doing the pendulum, which is like a very lucha move, and to Liger, and like he's doing it in the corner, cutting the ring in half, and there's dudes like pulling on Liger's hair. Every little cheap trick that they could pull out, except for Dream Police and the Flame, they were throwing at these dudes. And Kanemoto,
did you just make a cheap trick reference not once but twice?
Yes, I did.
they're playing here, by the way, in September.
I'm sure that dude Robin, I forgot what his last name is going to try to fit into that Dream Police costume again too.
Dude, I'm thinking about going. Sorry, it's like really 5 minutes from my house.
Hey man, it's a rare treat to see Cheap Trick. So
yeah, I'm sorry, dude. Go ahead, finish.
So oh my god, you know Kanemoto, who used to be Tiger Mastery, this dude has a reputation of just having a bad attitude, and he is laying some stiff as fuck, you know, hits to El Samurai, stretching the shit out of this dude. Like he's trying to break like every single bone in his body. And, you know, miraculously during this match, yes, Mighty Wings by Cheap Trick is probably their best song, in my opinion. Anyway, responded to Matt in the chat room. But seriously, Benoit ups the ante and hits Kanemoto with a tombstone pile driver off the second rope.
Yeah.
How many dudes have had their necks broken from tombstone pile drivers? Quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
And Benoit's doing it off the second rope. Have you ever seen a guy jump off a rope doing a tombstone pile driver?
No.
Benoit was doing it. And he scored the first fall for his team because of this. And right after that fall, Benoit's back on the attack. Gets the lion tamer on Kanemoto. Using some of Jericho's moves. Liger's in there. He's hitting him with all his finishing moves. He's hitting him with the Liger Bomb. He's hitting him with the Palm Strike. Just beating this man like they owe them money now. And, you know, Tani gets tagged in. Hits I believe, Benoit with his own move. With the Dragon Suplex. No, actually, no. It was Hamada, Grand Hamada, that he hits with the Dragon Suplex. But we're going to get to Otani Benoit match soon enough. But he hits him with a perfect Dragon Suplex to Grand Hamada, the legend. And, you know, there's a few tags in there. Benoit's back in there getting the shit kicked out of him. I would say Benoit's probably the Robert Gibson of this match. He is getting his
or to Tommy hands. Rogers, rest in peace.
Yeah, Tommy Rogers. Actually, Ricky Morton was the guy that took the beating, ass handed to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And boy, did they do it in grand fashion. This point where they just drag him to his corner, to Otani's team's corner, and each member is jumping off the rope with a knee drop. And then they're like, well, you know, that isn't enough. So they all start coming off the top rope doing double stomps to Chris Benoit. And Tani does give Benoit the Dragon Suplex. Kanemoto gets in the ring and says, fuck you, I'm doing my old finisher, the Tiger Suplex. Hits him with that. And it's like, no, we're not done just yet. You know, just to put an exclamation point on the top of it, Taka Michinoku gets in there and does a Taka Michinoku driver.
Yeah, so everybody got their moves off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody gets their finishing hold on, with the exception of Ishikawa, because I don't think the guy even had a finishing move at that time.
No.
After all that, Benoit, you know, gets a save for only two. And... you know, Lucky Benoit has his teammates drag him over to the corner to get tagged in. So Hamada gets tagged in. You know, the tables get turned. You know, the advantage is finally back, you know, with Benoit's team. And Benoit gets the second straight fall by powerbombing Ishikawa with a vicious powerbomb. Like, he's trying to put the guy through the mat. Pins him, 1-2-3. Extremely vicious 2 out of 3 falls tag team match.
I'm getting messages on social media asking if this stuff is on YouTube or Dailymotion, and it is.
Oh, yeah, we're putting it all up there after the show.
Yeah, Dave's going to post all the links on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
So.
So, after that, you know, I'd like to, two more matches. We got Tenzan versus Kojima. You may recall they were recently NWA World Tag Team Champions. They were IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions as Tenkozy, which was like a play on both of their names. This is back when Tenzan still could move around the ring with more grace and more style, as you could say.
Yeah, Tenzan always had that fresh gear, too, and he had that, yeah, the spike mullet.
His mullet was always on point. Always had some sort of like dye job in the back.
And he was part of the Hellraisers too, with Road Warrior Hawk.
No, that was Ken Sasaki.
No,
it was Sasaki.
So, you're right. Yeah. And but Tenzan had that fresh mullet.
Yeah. Don't get your mullets confused.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I know they all look alike.
They do actually.
So, but Kojima, he had like the bull kind of like mask that, you know, when he would come down the aisle, had like the big ass bull horns on the side.
Yep.
Had the fresh mullet, as you mentioned. And, yep. You know, these guys are two guys that grew up in the system together. They actually recently had a, NWA World Heavyweight title match recently where, Tenzan was defending against Kojima. And defended successfully on a, I think it was like Road to Wrestling Dontaku show. It was like something that's not on New Japan Network, which is a shame because they had all these like great NWA title matches, but they weren't on New Japan World. But anyway, this is an earlier match between these guys. Pretty short match. Get another slab of beef, kind of just like out. Trying to outdo one another with every hold and every move that they're doing. There's a point where they're just like the beginning of the match, like similar to the Harlem Heat match with like Stevie Ray and Hashimoto. Like they're just trying to like, you know, shoulder checking each other, you know, trying to see who's going to budge first. And these dudes are just clotheslining each other over and over again. And you know, I can think like, and these dudes are pretty heavy, you know, like they're muscular, but like they obviously got like some padding on them. It's like, how can like two dudes, you know, I know Kojima is tall. I've seen the guy wrestle in person. The guy is huge, but I don't think Tenzan is that tall. And it's just like two guys that are, you know, close to 300 pounds charging at each other, clotheslining each other. What kind of impact is it having on these guys where they're not winded and they're just continuing on throwing each other around? And, you know, was it Kojima? He's another master of the lariat. And it's just a point where he just rips Tenzan's head off with a clothesline early in the match. And, you know, knowing that that's that guy's finisher, and this is just like a move that he's perfected over the years. And it's not easy to perfect a clothesline. You know, a lot of the, some of the easiest moves that, you know, it just seems like such like a simple move just takes like so much like work and effort. And, if anybody ever gets a chance to see the, Stan Hansen, 4-disc, set that New Japan put out a while back, you could see the dude had a sloppy ass clothesline in the beginning.
Yeah.
But this guy just like connects and rips Tenzan's head off. And, you know, later on the match, just muscles this dude up with a German suplex. Only gets a 2 count. So he's like, all right, couldn't get him with a German. Gonna moonsault him. moonsaults Tenzan, an almost like 300-pound dude, who also has a pretty nice mullet.
Yeah.
Battle of the mullets.
Yeah, mullets were big. Slabs of beef and mullets.
Hits this motherfucker with a moonsault. Two count. All right. Kojima, he's one of his big moves is the top rope elbow drop, a la Macho Man.
Yep.
Hits the top, the high rent district, as Gorilla Monsoon would say.
Yep.
And misses.
Yep.
So, you know, Tenzan, you know, gets his bearings back. Hits him with a flying headbutt. Only two count. Again, like, these dudes are massive. Flying, like, off the top rope, doing some heavy-ass shit. Only getting two counts. So Tenzan's like, all right, you could do a moonsault. So am I. Ascends to the top. Flies as gracefully as he can. Connects perfectly for a three count. Tenzan is your winner.
Crazy.
So we got one more match. Leaving this one as the main event.
And this is all the tour.
These are all just random matches on the tour.
Right.
There's six matches in total. We're going to hook you up with Daily Motion. But Crowning Jewel, which I thought was like really strange that, you know, that this was on some random New Japan event, and it wasn't on WCW television, but it was the finals of the WCW Cruiserweight Tournament being held in Japan with the two finalists, which was Wild Pegasus, Chris Benoit, and Shinjiro Otani.
I think I saw this match, though. Not on WCW, but I think I saw this match.
Probably saw it on YouTube or something like
that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But the finals were determined in Japan, and this was done on March 20th, 1996.
Right.
So you have a date there. And, you know, true to the eight-man tag, the two out of three falls match that we're talking about, just dudes just beating the shit out of each other and stretching each other every way possible. But this time around, Benoit has the clear advantage on Otani. Beginning of the match, he's... You know, get him in the front chancery. You know, no, actually, Otani's got him in the front chancery with an Indian leg lock at the same time. Like, how brutal is that? He's stretching the dude's legs like a pretzel, and you know, he's got him in the front chancery. You know, sucking the wind out of him. There's a point where Otani just like donkey kicks Chris Benoit during the match. How often do you see a donkey kick?
No, honestly, that's probably out of desperation, though. I don't think he... that's something you do...
I don't recall how the move was, what was the sequence of moves. But I'm pretty sure he just kind of, like, had him, like, in, like, a... I think Benoit may have had him, like, in a crossbow. Otani must have gone down to his knees and just, like, used the momentum just to... donkey kick this guy so he can get him off of him. So Benoit, he's pulling out the walls of Jericho, and calling forth the spirit of the Dynamite Kid and pulling out one of his moves by suplexing Otani to the floor. From inside of the ring, which is just vicious. That, you know, just pulling a dude like up over your head and just dumping him over the top rope, like he's a sack of shit, to the floor. And to add insult to injury, just hits the ropes, does a suicide dive, you know, pushing him right into the guardrail. Just insanity. You know, Chris Benoit just being absolutely reckless. Living up to the name of the Crippler in this match. You know, brings Otani back in the ring. Actually, there's a point... Otani gets, like, a little bit of an advantage. Another just, like, vicious, just, like, stretch. He, you know, I've seen dudes do camel clutches where they turn it into a full Nelson or stuff like that. But this was one of the first times I saw, like, somebody take a camel clutch... and add on a sleeper onto it. So Benoit is being stretched, you know, from the camel clutch and also having like a sleeper applied to him. Benoit comes back again, you know, bringing back some of the Dynamite Kid into him, just hitting him with like a snap back suplex, hitting him with a snap suplex as well. And, you know, they're just going back and forth, and, Otani gets his second wind. He does it. He backdrops, Benoit on to the outside over the top rope, give him a little bit of revenge there, hits a springboard splash to the outside, throws Benoit back into the ring, hits him with a springboard leg lariat for a two count. So Benoit gets his you know, 15th win back, hits him with the Three Amigos German suplex. Otani kicks out. And if that couldn't do the deal, you know, Wild Pegasus Chris Benoit hits him with a superplex. That he just superplexed the soul out of this dude. It is so stiff, bringing him right through the ring, sends the top rope, Dynamite Kid again with the headbutt, only gets a two count. Otani comes back, hits Benoit with one of his with his finisher back in ECW, the Dragon Suplex, only gets a two. It actually releases the guy. Benoit makes a return, and, you know, what's it called? Benoit makes a return, hits him with a powerbomb, no dice, tries to go for a powerbomb off the top rope. Otani's not having any of that. Knocks Benoit off, hits him with a missile dropkick. And finally, after all this crazy shit that they're doing, it's like kind of like what you were talking about not too long ago. It's like, how do they end this match?
Right.
They've done everything except for, you know, put the stake through his heart, hit him with the silver bullet, put the garlic around his neck, whatever you got to do, the wolf's bane. And Otani, you know, ascends to the ropes again. Hits him with a springboard DDT. Puts the exclamation point on this match and becomes the first WCW Cruiserweight champion. In a match that, even for WCW, this would not get aired on a Nitro, WCW Pro, or any of that.
Right, because it's probably more than the 10 minutes they needed for the commercials.
So, yeah.
So, you know.
So this match went about a half hour.
Of course it did.
And, you know, Otani's congratulations for being one of the most superb wrestlers of all time was to return to WCW and then lose to Dean Malenko on WCW Pro, which I remember staying up late to see, because they made, I remember WCW was talking about doing a cruiserweight division and a tournament for this title for like years.
Yep.
For like a good 2 years, they would just bring it up randomly. And they were going to have a face Brian Pillman be a part of it. He was going to be the face of it.
Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, it just nothing happened. And then out of nowhere, they finally got their shit together. But it appears, you know, the finals was done in Japan. Otani came back. You know, he was a part of the New Japan Invasion that was happening on Nitro, which culminated at Starcade. Starcade 96, I believe. No. I don't think it culminated in 96, because 95 was the Starcade New Japan versus WCW. But then they just continued on having a lot of these guys still on television, because a lot of people were still being used for, a lot of Japanese were being used for the women's division, and just for random matches. They were trying to stack their lineup as much as they could to go against WWE. And, but I remember, clearly, you know, when they finally announced, like, hey, we have a new WCW, cruiserweight champion, he's going to be on television. So I wanted to make it a point to make sure I was watching.
Right.
And, immediately drops the belt to Dean Malenko on WCW, worldwide at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I remember that. I remember.
On NBC.
Yep. Chat room is lighting up a little bit. You mentioned Mighty Wings before. Kid Humans, I can go for some hot wings right now.
Well,
Passes Adele says, "You know you've been suplexed when your soul leaves."
Yes.
and Matt says, "I ate a bag of chips and some sausages. I'm full. I don't want to think about food."
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's Hyper Battle 1996. This is just like a collection of matches that I presume were put up on VHS for Japanese audiences. Again, you know, I think when it comes to strong style, the epitome of strong style is truly All Japan in probably 1992. But obviously, this is like the main style in Japan. So it was still continuing on. I think this is like a perfect example of what Japanese wrestling is all about. You know, despite it not being like a critical year for Japanese wrestling, but still, you get to really witness, as Phil would say, it's not pretty, but it is professional wrestling at its finest.
It is. It is. And it's really good that you found all that. And it's also good that we can share that with everybody else tonight, because you know what? I know sometimes it's Japanese wrestling it's an acquired taste, and I've said that before on a couple of our shows.
Yeah. But it's not on television all the time. It's not like in front of us 24/7. No. So it's hard to keep track of who's who.
Right.
Why you should care about it and where do you go to watch it.
Right. So Dave will post the links, and just, you know, while you're perusing the internet, when Dave posts, just take a look at some of these matches, and you'll agree that it's such a different vibe, you know, and it tells a really good story, like I of course love, and it's just you know, for me anyway, it's a break from the norm, you know. It's like you know, trying out new food. You go to a restaurant, it's like, ah, you know, it's, you don't see it all the time, but it's nice to revisit it once in a while.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I really suggest, you know, while you're watching these matches, check out some of the matches that are going to be on the sidebar.
Yeah.
Check out some of those matches. You're going to see some, like, really incredible stuff. Yeah. And
the Hashimoto stuff is off the chain ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. He's like you said at the beginning of the show, he's one of the most underrated dudes. Not too many people talk about him.
Yep.
He looks like Tokyo Elvis. And but when he's in the ring, he's serious as hell, and he's a pretty flexible dude for a possibly like a 300-pound-plus dude.
300 pounds, 5'11",
and you know, at the end of the day, this is kind of like, I know this is a stuff that like wrestling fans love and crave, but again, like I said, it's not in front of our face all the time. New Japan is still just an internet-based network, which, you know, for me, it's like really hard for me just to continuously go back on the website, because I'm in front of a computer all day at work. So I don't want to go on the computer all day once I get home and destroy my eyes so I can just watch more wrestling. I'd rather watch it on TV, you know?
Hopefully they'll
put one thing at a time. Actually, you know, actually there is some news that I just completely forgot all about. And that's All Japan has their own network that's already started, but they're making it even harder because I think they're doing it. It's kind of like a like you have to pay to watch whatever specific match.
You pay per match, yeah.
Yeah, you have to pay per match.
Like on demand. I know
pay per views are actually pretty cheap. I think they're like they're probably less than $6. Our money, but I think there's like a catch, and you have to have like a Japanese television like serial number, which is like really strange. Why would you, like, I don't know, the best way I can describe it, and this is, you know, from insight that I get from working with the film festival, because they love showing Japanese movies. I love, you know, going to watch Japanese movies, and they put it out very bluntly to me not too long ago, and it's like, it's really expensive to get prints from them, and they really don't care about anything that's happening outside of Japan. And to a degree, they kind of don't even care about themselves, which I don't fully understand that statement. But if you try to track down any Japanese movies, you'll notice that they don't have any English subtitles on it. They actually don't even have any subtitles for any country other than Japan on their movie releases, They don't really go out of their way to make it easy for anybody to read their language or understand things and stuff like that. When I was in Tokyo, I was surprised that I was able to move around with what little I knew, and there actually was like quite a bit of stuff translated in English. But when it comes to entertainment and, you know, music and DVDs and stuff like that, not really going to get that kind of treatment. But that's the deal. But it's, you know, I understand it's hard. I'm going to try to make it easy for you guys to check out this stuff because it really is great. And, you know, as we, you know, talked about tonight, to quote my favorite band, Social Distortion, you know, Japan is where the tough guys go and come back even tougher.
Speaking of Japan, I have breaking news. And chat room just broke it. We're going to stick with the theme of Japan. Finn Balor will return to Japan on the 4th of July. Well, he'll face Kevin Owens for the NXT Championship. And they'll broadcast it live from Tokyo Sumo Hall on the WWE Network as part of a supercard. Nice. Featuring John Cena, Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, and more.
Actually, July 4th in Osaka, it's going to be Finn Balor against Chris Jericho.
Oh, no. July 4th, he's fighting Kevin Owens.
Oh, so they must have changed the match then.
Yeah.
Because initially they announced it as Jericho was going against Finn Balor. But this is going to be awesome. This is going to be off the hook.
I will be on vacation, but I'll have a computer with me as always, and I'll be checking in, and I'll check it out while the kids are sleeping. You know what I always do. I put the laptop on in the hotel whenever he goes to sleep. Catch up on it. That's gonna be fantastic. That I think that'll be the turning point where Kevin Owens gets the full roster spot up on NXT.
Yeah, man. I think
from NXT to the main roster, I should say.
Yeah, I think it's academic at this point because his showing at Elimination Chamber was just so strong.
Yep,
you couldn't deny it. You know, I know. Like again, like I said at the beginning of the show, a lot of people want to. A lot of the internet fans wanted to shit on the other internet fans for saying, like, oh, well, this is what happened with Roman Reigns. It's like, no, that's totally not what went down. Kevin Owens is like, as you said, he's the complete package. He's ready to go.
Yeah, apparently
Roman Reigns might benefit better from being in NXT than...
apparently Scott said that Nick German posted it first, but again, I don't really have the shit on the page because it's too many people posting stuff. So... it was breaking news in the chat room, so thank you.
No, Nick Germain did this, huh?
Yeah, I'll be seeing him on my vacation, too, so.
Really?
Yes, I will be.
Tell him I said hello.
I definitely will. About to wrap this up or what?
Yeah, man, it's time to hit the road. I got to do some emails for the film festival, and I'm not going to have zero time to get gas tomorrow, so I have to drive out to some cheapest gas station I can find and get gas tonight. Probably after midnight.
Right, be careful there, kid. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, thanks for everybody for hanging out with us tonight. Let's play some music. And let's see. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com. All our episodes are up there right now. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. RantEMRadio.com. Don't forget, this Friday night, Kid Human takes over the Rant. Wrestling Colon Show on Saturday. What Are You Reading Comic Book Show on Sunday.
Is there going to be anything live on Friday or Saturday, rather, when Scott takes over?
No, just
Scott's not going to be able to say a few words or anything.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Maybe he can disrupt the wrestling call-in show at night or something.
Maybe, possibly. New Shining Wizards is out right now. They just put it up a little while ago. Go get that. We're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Leave a review. We are on TuneIn Radio now. Just search Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You get all our episodes there, too. Okay? Go do that. Also, we have t-shirts, prowrestlingtees.com/Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You want to snail mail us, turnbuckle throwbacks1@gmail.com. Twitter at tbuckletbacks. Facebook.com/Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Join the group page. Always fun. Always good times. Dave, anything else before we go?
No, that's it for now. I'm going to be hitting you guys up with some news for the New York Asian Film Festival. I know there's some New Yorkers in the area. I'd love to see your faces at the screening so you can meet me in person.
All right.
Holla at you, boy.
So, guys, as always, for Mega Powers, I'm the Impact Player. Bidding you adieu. Please, guys, don't get arrested. Don't get the clap. Hug your mom. Be kind to animals. Support indie wrestling. Buy a t-shirt. And we'll see you next week. Say goodnight.
Goodnight.